Hello and welcome to the first podcast, Razzball Fantasy Football Podcast of the 2015 season. This is Jay, the editor-in-chief for Razzball Football. And if you notice the difference, this is not Nick. Nick usually hosts the podcast, but if you've listened to the baseball podcast at all, you've realized that we've kind of gone back to an old school format with him doing whatever it is he's doing. Last time I talked to him, I think he was on a cruise ship. So I guess the conclusion is that he became a Somali pirate and he's probably busy at the moment, pillaging and getting booty and whatnot. Pirate booty, not regular booty. He's married, so as you know, married people get no booty, I guess. But we're here to sort of do, I don't know what you would call it. It's a new version of the podcast. It's going to be a little bit more personal, aka ghetto. It's going to be a little more ghetto, I guess. The production value is going to be basically me and some music and some T-Hole, which will be, he'll be joining me later. So it'll be basically be Jay and T-Hole talking about football, talking about stuff. It'll be like a magazine show, like a 60 minutes of podcasting, which I guess you could just listen to the 60 minute podcast. But we're going to do better than that, hopefully. We're going to be a little bit more fantasy football focused and other focus stuff, if that makes sense, which now that I'm thinking in my head, it doesn't. But if you like Razzball, if you like football, if you like me, I know you like me, and if you like T-Hole, which that may be a little bit iffy, but just, you know, go with me on it. You will probably enjoy what we have to bring this season. So we're going to start the show off, and we're going to start it off. Well, I just said that, so I have no idea what I'm doing now. It's kind of like redundant at this point, and now I'm just drawing it out until the awkwardness passes, but it's not passing. So let's go and start it. Let's start the show. Welcome to the show. As I mentioned in the intro, we're going to be doing things a little bit differently this year. It's just going to be me and T-Hole, or I guess the proper way would be of saying it would be T-Hole and I. I just want to,
yes.
So none other than T-Hole is here. He's our enigmatic underwear model slash writer slash. Well, I don't know. I guess you could fill in the blank, T-Hole. What's the last thing that you want to be known for?
Entrepreneur. What's another word? You know, I like.
No. You're allowed one. Is that the one?
I did write about some of my charitable endeavors over in Tibet and other areas of that nature. We can talk about that another time.
No problem. And again, you guys can find T-Hole right now. He's writing on the baseball site, as is everyone pretty much. It is the height of the baseball season. His post comes out every Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, and you can find him there. But here, we're set to talk about the draft. That's the big thing NFL-wise happening soon. But before we get to that, probably want to take care of a couple news tidbits that have come out recently. There's I don't really want to touch on Tim Tebow's thing, because to me that's not really news. It's more of a cry for help. For the Eagles. I really, you know, I just, whenever Tim Tebow, something comes up, it's just like, man, do I have to write I do have to write about it because it's Tim Tebow, but I really don't want to. Does anybody care? Do I bump up the hits from the Christian base? Maybe that's a good thing. You know, so it's tough for me. I mean, do you have any, like, quick thoughts on the Tim Tebow signing? Does it mean anything for us?
Yeah, it's kind of, at least it's semi-intriguing, I suppose, since it's your favorite coach, Chip Kelly's offense, or is like maybe one of the only places you kind of get him moving around a little bit. The thing I had with him is, you know, he was such a winner for that one year. Like, it was crazy. Like, it was hideous, but like they were getting it done. I figured he'd keep a spot maybe at least would have lasted another year or two in the NFL, but the kind of sideshow thing is kind of a turnoff, obviously, to the owner. So I don't really have a lot of interest in him, per se.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting that the Eagles have essentially collected every first-round quarterback that has existed the last, like, 5 years or something, I think, at this point. But related – well, I guess not related, just really quick, I guess I should note Maurice Jones-Drew retired, announced his retirement, which I guess we saw coming about 2 years ago. But he kept on playing anyhow, but
He was holding out 2 years ago, trying to get an extension. Good thing Jacksonville did something right.
I mean, it's somewhat sad because I'd say the height of my football fandom, he was a star at the time when he played for the right. For the Jaguars. He was an amazing talent. I still remember. I think my favorite memory of him was when he took out Sean Merriman on a block. And I think that's
lights
out. I mean, obviously, that was after Merriman's knee got torn up by Jeff Fisher, who's probably one of the dirtiest coaches in the NFL. I mean,
overrated coach in the NFL. Maybe.
That too. Yeah. No, I totally agree. He's frankly, he's quite a mediocre coach.
Yeah.
But he can be dirty too. I mean, he ordered a chop block on Sean Merriman, which essentially ended his production as a defensive player, and he ruined Antonio Gates's foot for a while with a dirty tackle, I think it was. But this is probably selective memory because I'm, you know, obviously a biased Chargers fan. But as I was mentioning with the Eagles, there's always seems to be something related to them and Marcus Mariota. Of course, we'll get to the draft later, but there's been several transactional rumors coming out of there. I think only because Chip Kelly has done like 95% of the transactions this offseason. I mean, he's handled all of them, and he's actually like gotten all the Oregon Ducks he can, obviously. But the first rumor coming out affected, of course, the aforementioned my team, the Chargers, which was, was Philip Rivers going to the Titans for some picks, and Sam Bradford ending up on the Chargers, and then ultimately the Eagles getting the Mariota pick. And it sort of morphed into this weird thing where it would be the Browns involved, and they would be getting Sam Bradford and trading their picks and stuff to the Eagles, and just a whole bunch of stuff going on. What's your feel on this? Like, do you see something happening? Do you see them going after Mariota, or are they just going to stick with what they got?
At first I was to be honest, I was totally shocked when they did the Bradford deal, and I assumed this can't be it. This cannot be the fit. Like, Foles have been pretty solid there. I'm not a Bradford fan at all. He struggled throwing the ball, like, down the field. Everybody says he throws. I mean, he might be perfect in that offense if he's throwing some of these just quick hitters all day, short routes, Tom Brady stuff. But I just don't he's been hurt ever since I can remember. The guy's played, like, what, one or two complete seasons, yet he's still this coveted guy. Like, he just doesn't have that it factor for me. He's got nothing. I just assumed that they, like, picked up another pick in the Foles trade. Instead, they had given up even more to acquire Bradford and gave up Foles. So I just assumed. I'm like, okay, this has to be him. Kelly must have talked to one of these other coaches, Fisher or Pettin or whatever, and been like, they preferred Bradford. I'm like, okay, it has to be him trading Bradford to move up to get Mariota. Like, it was just shocking to me. And then as far as Rivers, I could see the whole Tennessee thing working out. At first I found it hard to believe people were saying, oh, they should trade, Rivers straight up for the number two pick. And I was like, is that enough for Tennessee to get a 34-year-old quarterback or 33 for the two overall pick? It's just, I don't know, it's never been done before. So I kind of doubted that would happen, but I don't know. Rivers is from the South. It would definitely improve Tennessee in the short term. I mean, I don't know how you feel about dumping Rivers at this point for the Chargers, but.
Well, look, I mean, I have to say, it's complicated. I feel Rivers has more inflated worth than he probably has. He is an aging quarterback. I'm aware that he plays injured. Who knows how he'll age going into his 34, 35, 36 years on this earth. But I just don't see why the Titans would do it. I mean, they're not ready to compete at this moment. And I think they're still a couple years away. I can understand them wanting, you know, an elite quarterback, which I still think he is. I mean, I would say he's the lower tier of elite quarterbacks. He's probably in the top six or seven in the league, in a quarterback-starved league. But is he enough to change their fortune? Maybe. But is it worth giving up on? I mean, they could have Marcus Mariota. Why wouldn't they build around him?
Yeah, the only thing I've said, you know, I've debated this, is one of my friends is just goes off on me all the time about these things, and he's just, you know, he's just like, this just can't fit Wisenhunt's scheme, blah, 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 there's just no way. And I'm just like, well, you know, if I'm the owner, I'm not Wisenhunt, I'm like, dude, make it work. Like, we don't care if this, you got to make this work for us if we're going to go with him. They won, like, they're one of the worst teams in the NFL last year. Like, you know, Wisenhunt, if they have a bad year, he's on his way out. But if I'm the owner and approve a trade, I'm not just approving a trade just so my team can win 6-7 games to save my coach's job, who's done a piss poor job already. So it's a really complicated thing. I mean, I could see Cleveland maybe trading up to get it, but I'd like to see him end up in Chip Kelly's offense. I want to see the running and a real running quarterback in that offense to see at its full capabilities. That's what I want to see. I hope it happens. I don't know.
Yeah, and you know, it may be hot air on my part, but I find it really hard to believe that any coach would demand a quarterback to fit his system. I think it works in reverse in the NFL. I think the coach creates a system that benefits most to the team, you know, to the offense personnel that they have. You know, I think the best example, you know, we mentioned it with Tim Tebow. I think at the time, Mike McCoy changed the entire offense when they went to Tebow, and that's when he had the most success. So was that coaching or was that Tebow? I think you could argue is a little bit more coaching and a little bit more miraculously. I don't know. Maybe God had a part in it. Who knows? I don't really believe in God, so, you know, probably not. But what I'm saying is, you know, I think coaching in the NFL, you do what's best for your team, and I think that always starts with putting your players in the best situation that they can be. So I don't think that he is so concrete in his system where he's like, well, he doesn't fit my system, I'm not going to get him in. So to me, you know, that seems a little self-serving, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they can get a huge haul for that pick, like, I'd consider it, but they got a kind of a strange roster. Like, they got some okay pieces here and there, but a nice young, exciting quarterback could do them a lot of, could be a huge step for them. Although, after the whole Jake Locker fiasco, they might want to go for a more traditional guy or stick try Mettenberger another year and look for a different guy. But I'm not a huge Mettenberger guy personally.
I just like seeing his face in the news. It's just so, you know, his facial hair selection is quite unique, you know. So going back to Phillip Rivers really quick, I didn't mention it, but I have to say I can see why the Chargers and him are having a little bit of an issue, and it's all related to the stadium issue going on in San Diego right now. It's just the city and the Chargers have been working, it feels like over a decade now, of trying to get a new stadium. It's not like other situations, like let's say up here in Landover, Maryland, where, you know, the Washington team is looking for a new stadium, even though they got one just like 13 years ago. The Qualcomm is, it literally is leaking. Like they show pictures of it, the press rooms, it leaks when it rains. You know, there's sewage that comes into the team locker rooms. I mean, it is a rundown, you know.
It's got to be the worst stadium in the league, is it not? I mean, right, I have obviously been to every stadium, but I'm assuming it's bottom three without having to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it will never be the worst because Oakland still exists.
Oakland, yeah, we got Oakland.
Right, and that's just counting the city. I'm not even talking about the stadium. But, I mean, it's not a coincidence while there are rumors that they may team up to get a stadium deal done in Carson City, which is in L.A., and that, you know, the Carson City project is no joke. It's actually supposed to be, it's a proposed project to be done on a landfill, which in my head is still an improvement over Qualcomm, you know, so...
Definitely. What did you think about Rivers making those little comments about, like, well, I'm not signed through, we haven't moved to LA or whatever he said. He's like, well, I'm not signed long term, so at least I don't have to go there. Like, him basically saying he don't want to go to LA.
He's telegraphing it, and I think that's why these things are persisting. You know, the city is getting together with the team. There should be something of consequence, you know, out there. There should be something The needle should move before the season starts and during the season, so it'll be interesting. But if let's say the Chargers do trade Rivers, then that means that they're going to LA. It's pretty obvious at that point that they're going to go into a rebuild process and they're basically punting the season. Whether they go for Mariota, you know, maybe. I mean, there are reasons why they've been working him out. It's because, you know, Rivers and Mariota have a past relationship. They're actually pretty close, from what I've read. But beyond that, it's not to say Rivers is a lock. I want him to be a lock. I'm sure the Chargers want him to be a lock. But from a standpoint, if they know for a fact that they're going to Los Angeles, there's no reason to keep him. They might as well just get rid of him now while there's still years on his contract and while the league is, you know, it's always QB starved. I mean, I think that's why, you know, the Titans rumors get started, because they need a quarterback. There's probably about 15 teams, 20 teams who would take Phillip Rivers in a heartbeat. Whatever that price is, the market will set it. But there's at least 20 teams that will want him, definitely.
Yeah, I would say so.
But yeah, I guess since we keep on talking Mariota, we can just segue into the draft. And, you know, obviously, Mariota's the big name, Winston's the big name, and I always think in my head that Tampa Bay is just going to troll everyone and pick Mariota first, just to, you know, flip off the league. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think there's a reason why the first couple picks are kind of... You rarely see these surprises, right? I mean, usually the first three or four picks are usually kind of... They've already been decided before.
Yeah, this info usually leaks out. So, yeah, I think you'd hear something. And from what I read, it was like, you know, they're almost like somebody, I think Peter King or somebody who's got some pretty good inside connection, was just like 0.01 chance they don't take Winston at this point. So that looks kind of like a lock at this point.
Right. And so, you know, we have the regular names to talk about. Now, obviously, in the modern draft, defensive players, line players are usually the majority of top guys now. We obviously don't deal with them in fantasy football. But just to placate the IDP leagues out there, the leagues that use defensive players individually, who's one guy in this draft that could be a difference maker this season to you on defense?
Yeah, those are for the hardcore guys, man. I got to get into a league like that where I got the whole defense set up like that. That's kind of intriguing to me. I like, because baseball, you got a lot more stuff going on. So that's kind of intriguing. You know, I'm real hot. I really like Vic Beasley, the outside linebacker, Clemson. If he gets in a 3-4-D right from the jump, I mean, I'm thinking double-digit sacks from year one, maybe even 14-15. He is former running back, killed the combine, like 4-5, something like that. Huge, a lot of strength, vertical. It was weighed more than they thought he was going to weigh. So he's a freakish athlete. I think he's going to have a nice rookie year. He's going anywhere anywhere in the top 10 to some recent mock the ESPN guys did, had him going in the second round somehow, which blew my mind. So I'm not sure what happened there. You know, as far as a linebacker, I mean, the middle linebackers that are going to rack you up tackles, there's a couple interesting guys. You got the UCLA Eric Kendricks, outside linebacker. He's a guy I really like, so he should jump in and be starting right from the jump. He's more of like a second round pick. There's not a lot of middle linebackers in this draft. You got Denzel Perriman from Miami. He could end up starting right away as a middle backer, pick up a lot of just tackles. But then you got all the young pass rushers, so you could get a lot of set. I mean, there's a nice chunk of these pass rushing DNs. You got Randy Gregory, the idiot, the weed smoking guy who failed the test before the combine and made some pretty ignorant comments afterwards, just making him kind of unappealing. Bud Dupree.
Well, to be honest, you know, whenever I used to be stoned, I made some pretty ignorant comments, you know. So
right,
there wasn't the same, I mean, probably.
Like, I'm not mad at the guy. I'm not mad at the guy for smoking. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a little. you can't be failing these tests because after a while, I mean, they basically tell you when the drug test is. It's like you're at the NFL combine, like, just don't smoke weed a couple weeks before you come here. Like,
right, to me, it's about professionalism. Like, you're an adult, you can do what you want. I'm actually pro everything in this country. But, right. You know, when you're in an enterprise like this where it's a multi-million dollar profession and they just simply ask you, I think being professional is being responsible for yourself, being responsible for others, you know, and it goes to what you said is like, you know, maybe it's just as plain as, you know, don't be stupid. I mean, this is pretty obvious stuff.
Right.
They tell you when it's going to happen.
Yeah. And it's costing him. Like this guy was going top five, top 10, like for sure. And now it's kind of like, he's in the mid-teens, and people could easily see him dropping into, like, the mid-20s just because they're like, wow.
He'll just get drafted by the Cowboys then, right?
Right. Yeah, that's a perfect fit right there. I kind of like to see that. And one more guy that I want to mention who's dropping like a rock kind of, but still probably going the second, Shaq Thompson from UW, linebacker/safety kind of guy. He's going to be he's a freak, great player, one of the best players I've seen up here at University of Washington. He was originally supposed to be kind of a top 15, top 20 pick, but he didn't test that well at the combine, which surprised me greatly, and I was a little disappointed, but he's a football player. I think he finds a spot and can make some big plays.
Yeah, okay. So, honestly, I think I would just say that I think Vic Beasley is probably, from what you said, from my choices that you mentioned, I like Vic Beasley the most. Mainly because I think 50% of his production will come from the fact that Jim Haslett is no longer a defensive coordinator in Washington. So I think that improves them instantly.
Man, yeah. He hung on for quite some time there.
I never understood how or why, but, you know, stranger things have happened, I guess. I mean, but, you know, obviously I keep on mentioning it, Winston and Mariota, they've been talked about ad nauseum, so I think we can sort of skip them and people won't care, because, I mean, honestly, you could just Google and you'll have 18,000 results filling you in. But I'm more interested in kind of the running back prospects coming in. What are your thoughts on the big ones like Todd Gurley? Because I don't follow these guys from college. What do you have to say about them going into the draft?
Well, it's a pretty interesting running back class. I think Gurley, now that he's got kind of the clean bill of health here going forward, and they say he's going to be ready kind of for the season here, at the beginning of the season, no PUP most likely. He's rising up heavy. They got people starting to mock him in the top 10. A lot of people hate these mocks. I kind of like it just because it's something to talk about with the NFL. I love the NFL. I like to talk about it. But
that's why we're here, man.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. But, yeah, he's kind of the all-around. Everything's going there. Like, I mean, a lot of people say he's kind of the best running back prospect since an Adrian Peterson type. Which I can kind of maybe get on board with. It's not like I was watching Georgia every single week or studying his, but from what I have seen and the highlights I have watched and the games I have watched, he is a complete back, real deal, catches the ball, great size, pretty good speed. He's like Trent Richardson, but good. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's going to, like...
he's not Trent Richardson.
Yeah, he's not Trent Richardson, but early on, he kind of reminded me of Trent Richardson when Trent Richardson went to college, which is kind of scary, but I don't think he's going to go that route because that would be devastating, and nobody's as bad as Trent Richardson. Trent Richardson, every time I get on board, I'm like, he can't be this bad. He's going to be okay with the Colts. Okay, he can't be this bad. So-and-so got hurt. He's back in the lineup. I mean, that dude is all-time disgrace level at this point. Melvin Gordon, I was a little surprised his 40 time wasn't a little bit faster. I thought he was going to be a straight-up blazer, kind of like a Jamal Charles, like 4.3, 4.2. It was just crazy fast, but it was more like a, I think it was a 4.48 or something. Maybe it was even a 4.53. It was somewhere in that range where it wasn't, like, shockingly fast, so... That's kind of concerning, although he still looks pretty good. He kind of runs high. He's looking to go late one, possibly at the top of the second at this point. I'm assuming someone kind of slides up and takes him up there. A lot of people like the Boise State guy, Jay Ajayi. They could see him going to – if he falls to a place like Jacksonville at the top of the second round, if they're still pretty desperate for a running back, even – with your boy Toby Gerhardt over there, and Denard Robinson. Denard Robinson looked kind of solid in the limited opportunities, but I wouldn't trust him injury wise or whatever. So they need kind of a bell cow kind of back. I love that word, bell cow. And then
I love cowbell, so we can work out something.
Right. It's a good one. And then Abdullah, Nebraska, interesting. I saw him play against Michigan State, who has a really good defense. He didn't have a great game, so I was a little unimpressed when he's going against the top comp. Didn't quite show out. He was Heisman candidate early. He's kind of an interesting third down back, at least for now, or kind of a split time guy. Got Tevin Coleman, Indiana. He's kind of rising. I like him. Duke Johnson, Miami. There's a bunch of guys who could, like, if given the opportunity, could do some major work, like rookie year. But, you know, I don't think many of these guys are going to be the guy year one, other than, and even a Gurley is probably going to get worked in with it coming off the injury. So I don't know if you're getting any, unless like a Jahi, like I said, lands in Jacksonville and wins the job straight up and is getting 15, 20 a game. I don't see any of these guys doing that right out the gate, depending on, because even if you get like a Melvin Gordon or something, say he goes to Arizona, they're still going to give the other guy a bunch of carries. So it's, I don't know. I don't see any like true workhorse here other than Gurley, and it's still going to be a little while before that happens.
Right. I think you touched on it because, you know, what bothers me sometimes is when, not that anybody does it. I think I was about to do it, and I was about to say, well, listen, you know, in this draft, you have these running backs. Which running back would you choose that would be, you know, fantasy relevant this season? But then I caught myself. It's like, well, you don't know because we have no idea who they're going to be drafted to, and you built on it. So I guess my question would be, you start talking about it, like what? Let's say it's Gurley or Gordon. You know, some of the top tier running backs out there. What team do you think that they need to go to be fantasy relevant this season? Is it a Chargers? Is it I don't know, a Ravens? Maybe you know, one of those teams that are running back hungry that you could see them being a draftable.
Definitely, it's all about that. Like last year, that's why everybody was so high on Bishop Sankey. It's that first running back taken. He goes to Tennessee. They have nothing there. Sean Green. They're like, oh, how can he's going to get the carries? He's going to go up. Terrible year. Obviously, we don't need to touch on that. But he was a fairly high pick. You mentioned the Chargers. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out the Donald Brown signing from a year ago. That one's still kind of a.
I think that was the hometown effect. I think it's just because we have, you know, the old Colts. You know, we have some Colts guy heading our team. The guy who likes the Colts. That's what I'll just name him. So Donald Brown's terrible. I think he's just a. I'm sure he's a great person. He's just a useless football player to me. So
if we can get a real running back in there, we got Lil Whitey coming back, Woodhead coming back. So Donald Brown can move down to the third or just get cut, but probably he's for some reason owed guaranteed money, so I'm assuming he's going to be on the roster. So, yeah, that's a perfect spot. And I've seen, like, if Gurley lasts to 17, I've seen him going there, which would be a really nice fit. Although his body kind of reminds me of another Charger legend, Matthews in college, but hopefully better results. Last time the Chargers took a running back in the first round, but yeah, and then the Cardinals. You know, the guy I mentioned earlier, Andre Ellington. You know, I was a big fan of his.
Right, I remember you talking about Andre Ellington a bunch. Like, you know, to be honest, he had a good season at the beginning. You know, he kind of faded a little bit, but you were high on him last year, definitely.
Yeah, I was real high, especially in the PPR. The guy is a freak. He just, you know, and from what I'd seen of him, he's willing to go between the tackles. It looked like he was trying hard. It's just that O-line was just abysmal. They had, and then Cooper, the guy they drafted like 6th, 7th overall to play guard, got hurt his rookie year and then couldn't even beat out these, you know, waiver wire bums at guard. And I'm like, who drafts a guard in the top 10, and how is he not winning the job? So the O-line was pathetic. This year they got a potty in there to go with Valdir on the left side, so it should be a lot stronger over there. But they still need another running back. even to mix with him. So
right, they and to be fair, they also had a rotating door at quarterback last season. They were pretty hampered by that.
That got ugly.
Yeah, it got ugly real fast. I mean, I think they were scouting Arizona Bars at that point.
Yeah, I don't want to see that one dude ever in the league ever again.
Whatever his name was, yeah.
Right, yeah, whatever his name was. I mean, that's we were talking about Tebow earlier. Like, I feel like Tebow deserves to be in the NFL over a guy like that. Like, that guy just gives you no chance to win at all. Like, their chances of winning to me were, like, zero when that guy was in. I've seen Tebow win. I've never seen that guy win. But,
well, technically, mathematically, I think it was below 0%. It was like -5% probably. So.
Right. It was just awful. You mentioned the Ravens. They could definitely use another guy going forward. They re-signed Forsett, so he's good for a year. Can he match what he did last year? I don't know, but at least he's a solid guy. Taliaferro, the big guy, he was kind of interesting. I don't know if he's kind of the opposite spectrum of Forsett, so they probably would like a nice, good all-around back. So I don't think they'll do it in the first round. Doesn't really seem like Ozzie Newsome's style, but you never know. They'll probably take one in the second and third and just throw them in the mix.
Okay. You know, moving over to the next prime spot, we had last season was pretty amazing with the amount of talent that came out of the wide receiver position in the draft. And I think it's probably going to be, you know, at the end of the day, it's probably going to be considered one of the best drafts ever for the wide receiver position. This year, you know, I'll go off the same question. You know, for me personally, I'm paying attention to any wide receiver drafted by the Saints because at this point they have to. They have nobody there that can catch a ball. I think Drew Brees is probably going to have to pass to himself if they don't draft a receiver. So in terms of a team that needs a receiver, maybe the Eagles are there. Definitely Saints are there. You know, when you look at guys like maybe a Dorsett or maybe even a Perryman, like what do you see a match for with each other? What do you think of these receivers, where their match is? And are they fantasy relevant this season?
Yeah, it's looking like it, and there's guys out there, and I'm kind of semi on board with it. They're comparing this one to last year, like they're like these two. It's crazy for us 2 years in a row, and that could be like this because again, you got Cooper, White, Parker, kind of the consensus top three, and then this Perryman from Central Florida. He's rising up. They're saying he might go ahead of Parker now, and then the guy with almost more as much or more upside than any of them. Is Dorial Green-Beckham, who only played 2 years and then got in trouble and then transferred to Oklahoma, the huge guy. He's an interesting guy for the Saints. They're at 31. I mean, they could go with another small guy. They just drafted Cooks last year, who should put up insane numbers, I would imagine, especially PPR this season. Jalen Strong, it seems like he's going mid to late first round, so he might not be there at 31. They could go Devin Smith at Ohio State, who I really liked in college, and he's kind of a borderline first, second round pick. But yeah, I think the Saints go D with their first pick, and then probably a receiver would be nice. There's that Devin Funchess, Michigan guy, who's kind of a Jimmy Graham big tight end who doesn't block type, just basically a slot receiver. So, but they might be able to swoop him in the second round or something like that. So, yeah, there's some definitely – that is, like you mentioned, a great fit for one of these – whichever one goes there, Aguilar, Strong, Dorsett, Smith, any of these guys that go there, great chance to do something big there.
Yeah, speaking of Cooper, we actually you know, and you can tweet us at razball.com or at either one of our Twitters, at Bedek143 or at JRong. We did have a question. I don't know if it was a question. It was more of a plea that we that we not talk about Mariota Winston. As you can hear from us, we completely understand. We're probably sick of that ourselves. At least I know I am. I know T-Hole is. So he did ask about Amari Cooper, about Cobb, about Coleman. Is there anything you wanted to add? I know you mentioned Cooper really quick, but...
Yeah, I thought, you know, he's a lock. A lot of people thought he was a lock to fall to the Raiders, or, I mean, at least a receiver to the Raiders between Cooper and Kevin White, the West Virginia guy, who kind of blew people away at the combine. But now I'm seeing a lot of talk about the Jaguars, even after last year taking two receivers in the second round. I've heard of them possibly swooping Cooper there at three. So depending on the development of Bortles, we don't know. I don't know if how much I like to pick, but I like Bortles. I think he's gonna take a big step. If they got a Cooper there, I think he immediately becomes the number one, and then those other two from last year, Robinson and Marquise Lee, become decent options for him, or at least they'll keep all the. It's not like Cooper's going to be like triple teamed. I think those guys are good enough, and then they also added the Denver tight end there. So they, if they did that, they'd be kind of locked and loaded. If he falls to Oakland, like our guy on Twitter asked, because he's a big Raider fan, and every year he thinks they're going to win the Super Bowl.
He better be. His Twitter handle is Raider Front Office. He might actually be the Raiders front office. He's asking us our opinion.
Yeah.
They need a little help, so.
They do need a little help. I like their draft last year. I think their
defense is actually underrated. I mean, right. I think their defense could be pretty good this year, too.
If they could add Cooper, I love the pick, because they got, you know, James Jones is still there. He's probably going to get cut after this year. Maybe they hold on him just because they got nobody else. They got Crabtree on the one-year deal. If he does anything, I'm sure he's going to want to get out of there.
Yeah, that's just filler to me. But I think there's a spectrum of opinion that's either high or low on David Carr. I actually like him as a quarterback. I think he's got some I would call them intangibles. I think he's got some gusto. I like that he gunslinged it. Yeah, he's got some moxie, you know. what do you think of him? Do you like him as a quarterback?
Yeah, he was pretty solid. I mean, it's always hard for me to tell, like, how good these guys were, like, to take that next step. But, I mean, as far as a rookie season, I thought he played really well.
He certainly doesn't seem like his brother, so that's good, right?
No, he's already leaps and bounds above that guy, and we all remember Dad and David Carr growing out their hair till they could win back-to-back games, which I don't know if it ever happened in Houston. But, yeah, that was an awful...
Right. Both,
I think he's at least superior to that, and looking like at least a pretty solid guy. And I, you know, still time will tell if he can develop into an upper echelon, top 10, top 12 guy. But the ability looks like it's there, but we will see.
All right, now, you know, before we move away from some of the football stuff, I do want to do the. You know, we don't cover much dynasty stuff at Razzball. We're mainly focusing on the redraft leagues. Mainly because we don't have a dynasty apparatus that we've had in the past. We're looking to change that, of course. But from your standpoint, is there a running back, a receiver, maybe even a quarterback prospect out there that you don't see helping much next season, but in dynasty leagues, it could be sort of like a sleeper pick where you see it could pay dividends a few years down? I guess the best example might be somebody who picked up Christy Michael, you know, a few years back, and they're just waiting for, you know, him to flourish, which I think he can. I think he's going to be a good running back. It's just, you know, there's someone immensely better than him at that moment. But is there a golden ticket out there that someone should hold on to in this draft?
We're all waiting for Christina to get it together here. I mean, like, this guy, like, can you go? I'm questioning, like, they can't. We don't have a kick returner. We gave away Percy Harvin. We got another guy got hurt. We have no kick returner. This guy even returned some kicks in college. I'm like, you're doing nothing. Like, we're having to put Baldwin back there. You can't return kicks. It's pretty disheartening. I expected a little more out of Michael, but like you said.
Well, to be fair, you got within one bad play of another ring, so something must be going right up there.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about a coach who traded a third-round pick for, you know, Clipboard Jesus, which – you know, it was kind of, which was a terrible trade from my point. But hey, you guys have a Super Bowl and the Chargers don't, so obviously something went right.
Yeah, that was maybe not his best move.
Well, he was just starting, so maybe he's just getting a feel for the league. So
I think Whitehurst still has a chance to break out, but that's just me.
I do too. Jesus can do anything. You know, he can walk on water. He can throw a football.
Yeah, he's an intriguing guy. Really
very
cool.
Handsome too. Very handsome. But yeah. Who is your golden ticket? What do you think about that? Like who is you going for?
It's pretty difficult to, like, you know, that most of the big prospects are, you know, the guy I kind of like is the running back from where was he from? I kind of like David Johnson, this Northern Iowa guy. He's kind of got, he can catch the ball. He's probably going to go. He had a bunch of hype early, and now he's kind of slipped a little bit. He's 6'4", 225, kind of a wrecking ball, but he can catch the ball, like I said. So he's kind of an interesting guy to me. I think, like, if he gets a shot down the road, he could carry the load fairly well for somebody. Also, like, T.J. Yeldon is very intriguing for me from Alabama. Huge prospect early on. Was a, you know, star for them since freshman, sophomore year, playing the whole time. And now all of a sudden he has kind of a, you know, he didn't either look quite right or quite as good as they hoped he would be this last year. Now all of a sudden he's like the 10th ranked running back or something like that. I find that hard to believe. I feel like he maybe even still possibly has star potential. So maybe a guy like him, where if he sits for a year, somebody kind of luxury pick takes him in the third, fourth round, if he lasts that long or something, and sits a year or two. Oh, hey, if he ends up in Dallas, third round, mark him down. I mean, put him in the Pro Bowl. I mean, it's going on.
Wow,
I mean,
okay.
I mean, that's where you want a running back who, if Dallas takes a running back in the second, third round, something like that, you want that. That's a very intriguing play, fantasy wise.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I mean, their offensive line, it's been proven that they're the difference makers. I mean, Tony Romo had his best season. DeMarco Murray, of course, was healthy. That was a big part, but he had his biggest season too. And it's all because of that. Well, not all, but it's mainly because they have a functional, stout, pretty nasty offensive line out there in Dallas.
Yeah, it's a nasty, nasty O line. They got Martin in there now, and they're just you know, they lost their right tackle, backup right tackle who came in for free. Jacksonville signed him, but as long as free doesn't go down, you know, they should be good to go. And considering they've done nothing but bring in McFadden and have the guy they had from last year, they still got Dunbar and other guy, but no, those guys are not built to carry the load, I don't believe. And so if a rookie comes in and shows promise at all, I assume Jerry's going to be pushing for him to get in there from the jump. So it's a lot of opportunity there for whichever guy they end up taking.
Jerry's a very excitable human being as well, so I can see him just kind of that spry guy just kind of slowly getting up in excitement for that draft. So so okay, we if you have any more questions on the draft, on football in general, on Love even, you can reach Bedict on T-Hole, Bedict at T-Hole. I mean, what am I saying? I just said a whole bunch of gibberish out. You can reach him on Twitter. I think it's because they start with T's, but you can reach T-Hole on Twitter at Bedict, BEDDICT 143. And you can reach me at JRong. And keep going with us. We still got a little time. We're going to talk about well, I'm not going to give it away. I'll give a hint. It goes, dunna, 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 dunna. Did I get it? Yeah, I got some of it. That's a little taste. Earth. That's a little taste. So we're going to join us after the short break, and we'll see you on the other side. So as you can tell by the music, we're going to be talking a little bit of Game of Thrones. It's a show that I know T-Hole follows a lot. It's a show, you know, I enjoy very much. I wouldn't say I'm a diehard fan. I haven't read the books or anything, but I do watch the show. I enjoy the show. And I think, you know, when I interact with your post, T-Hole, on every Wednesday on Razzball Baseball when you have the Game of Thrones theme, sometimes it may seem like I'm not a big fan of the show because I critique it often. Through what you write, but you know, it's like any other show. I think there are problems, but you've actually read the books, right?
Oh yeah. Well, what happened for me is I as soon as I saw the first episode or two on TV, and I was immediately hooked. I mean, I think I was like around Easter or something one year, and I was over in California, over Palm Springs or something. My mom was watching it or something. They're just like, "Oh my God, what is it?" I mean, there was just a lot of sex, a lot of violence. They were just like, "This is terrible," and I was like, "No, this is legendary." So then, yeah, I went back and I read all the books like immediately, and unfortunately the first book, you wouldn't even need to read it. They followed the script so close on the first season to the first book, it was like you literally don't even need to read the book. But then it starts going off in a little bit different direction after that, where they kind of take the reins and decide what.
Yeah, now that's bold. I would never. This is not like a sit down, watch a show with your mother type of thing. I mean, no. I wouldn't watch it with my mother. I might watch it with your mother, but I probably wouldn't watch it with my mother. Right. It's just there's something there that's really, I think it would be uncomfortable for both of us. but now when you mentioned that you read the books, I only ask because I have learned that basically the season that we're watching now, I guess we're on episode 2, I suppose. Is that correct? We're on episode 2.
Correct. Okay. Sundays 3 is coming out, and then yeah.
Now, see, I should admit, T-Hole and I actually talked about this earlier, but I'm sort of ahead. I won't say why or how because it might involve some kind of illegality, but it's justified because I like watching this show in one lump sum, I guess, in one sitting. I think it moves faster because I found out that when I watch, like, I think I watched season 2 and 3. Weekly, and I didn't enjoy it as much as season 1 because I realized, you know, the first 4 weeks are they're just real slogs. You know, it's not like it's not entertaining, but nothing really happens. It's just all posturing, you know. And so I like watching it in, I mean, not one sitting. I'm not just sitting in a chair for 18 hours and not doing anything else. But I like watching it in spurts, I guess, is the best way. But going back to the point, it looks like that the Sansa storyline is brand new to everyone. Is that correct? Like, it's not written in the books yet.
Sansa, to a degree, I think it is. It's been, the guy hasn't put out the next book in for so long, and I read through them so quick. Like, I literally could not put them down until I got all the way up to where we are now.
I mean, he's never going to, right? He's never going to write again. I mean, easier just to do the TV show at this point, right? You think?
It seems like it, man. I don't know. I mean, it's gotten to a point where, and they said this like a year or two ago, they're like, the show's eventually going to catch up or surpass this guy because he takes like years and years to put out the book, even though you think he'd already have kind of the storyline and everything down. It's kind of odd. But yeah, it seems to be, I mean, in the books, I recall it getting up to that point where, you know, they threw lies out the moon door or whatever, and then they came back. And then I just don't recall this part where they meet up with, when they met up with old gal in the bar there and they ran off or whatever. I don't remember that part. And then I think they're starting to go, yeah, just do whatever they want with that. I don't believe that's in there, but
right. And now even going back to last season, the Brienne Hound fight didn't really even happen in the books. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. And then yeah, it was. I think it was a totally different thing. They like Brienne of Tarth. Obviously, the show creators want to keep her involved to some extent. It seems like, and so she's a main character, and they're doing a little bit of that with Bronn. As they brought him back in this episode, where in the books he kind of almost just disappears entirely, but he became kind of a fan favorite on the show, so they're trying to keep him around some way as he goes.
Which is weird to me because from what I've learned, any fan favorite is the one to die the next episode. Isn't that correct? I mean,
that seems to be the kind of the way it seems to go. Yeah, like even reading the books, it's just like, oh my God, like isn't this guy the main character? You're just gonna kill the dude. Like the Red Wedding, I was just waiting. I never told because the majority of the people that watch it haven't read the books. I would, at least of my friends. So like when that Red Wedding thing hit, people were just like in shock. And obviously Ned Stark, the first season, nobody actually believes he's going to get killed. Like this guy's the main.
Well, I would argue because, you know, if you go back to cinematic and television history, Sean Bean dies in like basically everything he's in. You know this because you and I, we watch the same thing. I have a feeling. And he dies in everything, so I saw that one coming. But you're right. The Red Wedding, man, that gave me some trauma. Like, I seriously felt ill after that episode just because of how shocking it was.
Yeah, stabbing the pregnant wifey in the guts there multiple times, the throat cutting, the whole thing. Yeah, it's a little much.
And, you know, going back on it, I thought it was... I mean, I can't say it was beautifully done because it was just so epically gory. But I will say this, I rewatched the ending and I realized the first time I watched it, I started feeling uneasy and I didn't realize why until I realized they were playing, you know, the Reigns of Castamere in the wedding. And they were playing it like the slow, melodic type. And I didn't really pick up on it, but I felt some kind of like weirdness going on, you know. And then out of nowhere, I forget her name, the mother, you know, sees that Bolden, you know, has the full armor on and she's like, okay, well, we're fucked. So I don't know. I just thought it was a wonderful scene. Of course, you know, when you say fan favorite, obviously Oberyn Martell was a huge fan favorite. The actor himself was fantastic. The character, of course, is fantastic. And he didn't get saved. But obviously that is a big, huge turning point, I think, obviously, for the last season and this season. And I know since you've read the books, I have to ask you, to be as spoiler-free as possible, but what... Is there something in this season that they are able to build on top of? Like, it's been a wonderful run so far, but it's hard to believe that they can keep getting bigger and better and more, I don't know, like, who are they going to kill off next? At some point, it becomes kind of like, well, I've seen that, I've done that before. Is there something to look forward to this season that would be, like, fantastic, that'll keep me interested?
Let me tell you something. If they follow the books, if they at least stick to what happens at the end of the next book, which I think we're up to the season of the last book written. I could be wrong, and I think they're kind of mixing and matching them. But if they follow that and they hit you with the he doesn't really do a lot of cliffhangers in his books. Like they end, but this next one, the last book. If they do that with this, it ends with the total the book ends with a total cliffhanger, and I've been sitting here waiting, I don't know, going on like 3-4 years now. How long have I been waiting to find the answer to what happened at the end of the book? I don't know, but it is going to shock people. Like none, like Red Wedding style, almost to that level.
All right, I'm going to hold you to that. And, you know, I one quick question more on Game of Thrones. I've been hearing that HBO wants at least a few more seasons, but that Martin, he does want to end the series in a 3-hour, 2-hour movie. Maybe, you know, the way movies are done nowadays, it's probably going to be a 2-parter at this point. But are you on board with that? Like, is there an ending that you could see here that is capable of being on the movie screen?
Well, I would be on board with that. At first, I was on board with it just because for the fact just of production and getting the money up, because I would assume they would put just a ton of money into it. You know, in the past they've always kind of shown the dragons as little as possible because it's so expensive with the CGI, and the budget gets upped has gone way up, so you've seen a little bit more of the dragons. But
in fact, the battle, the first battle when Stannis goes after King's Landing, I was a little disappointed with the special effects. It seemed very small scale, you know?
Right. The battle, it seems like it's like... Right.
It involved like 12 people, you know?
Yeah, like it was pretty weak. It was pretty, you know, it was cool, but if you really look, you're like, well, I mean, this isn't like the huge battle you'd...
Right. The entire budget was seriously just on the boat exploding. That was about it.
Right, so yeah, I mean, the movie thing, it's kind of a cool idea, but again, as the book, I have no idea how the story ends, so I don't know if it works out or if you need another full season. I mean, it could be cool, though, especially if they go all in money-wise. I mean, I assume it would probably end up being one of the biggest, highest-grossing films ever, I'm assuming.
You know, I mean, I don't even know if Martin knows how it's going to end, but there's a lot of stuff out there that says, well, Jon Snow is the eventual king, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, that seems too easy. That seems way too easy.
It is. You got her in Daenerys, and then you got a couple more characters who have yet to come into the fold, kind of, that pop out here probably this season if they go with the books. I honestly still have no clue, and I've read up as far as I possibly can. So,
all right. Well, moving on, because this isn't always going to be Game of Thrones, because obviously the show will end at some point in the season, and we can't talk about it all the time. But, you know, I do like using the space to sort of talk about what's going on out there, you know, stuff that you want to talk about, stuff that I want to talk about. And what's been really on my mind the past couple weeks is, I'm sure everyone's seen it, heard about it, talked about it, is that two big trailers came out. The first one being, of course, the new Star Wars trailer. And, you know, I just, starting out with that one, I just, my thoughts are, I was talking to some of my friends, and it's like, you know, I'd spent so much time hating, you know, I was always a Star Trek guy. I love Star Wars because, you know, of course, I grew up as a kid watching it, enjoying it and whatnot. But, you know, I have to say the next series of movies that involve Jar Jar and, you know, young Anakin, those just, it felt like he literally shed it on my entire childhood, you know, like... Right.
Is Jar Jar the most hated character? I mean, I've never heard so much hate. I had to go back and, like, watch that first one again after I heard all the hate. Because the first time I saw it, I really didn't notice as much. But the hate was just so...
Right. I mean, I contemplating filing child abuse charges for, you know, for ruining my
Jar Jar.
Right. Like, he's the reason. It wasn't, you know, like my uncle touched me or anything. It was because Jar Jar, you know, just ruined my life. No, I mean, it's not that bad. But obviously, George Lucas has some weaknesses as a writer, as a director. He definitely has some weaknesses, and it's like they all compounded for that series of movies. And, you know, so much time had passed. It's like, well, it's hard to be excited. But then the first trailer comes in. It's like, you know, it looks pretty cool. I'm into it because it didn't really show anything. It just showed, you know, you heard the familiar sounds like the lightsabers, and you're like, okay, sounds kind of cool. And then the new trailer hits, and the way it was delivered to me, just really quick, is it was sent to me over my phone via text. So I didn't get to see, like, a preview of the picture, and I think that would have ruined it for me, because when I look at YouTube and it has the picture of Han Solo and Chewbacca, so I would have instantly known that they were in it. But the way I watched it, it was completely fresh, and at the end, when Harrison Ford does his best acting that I've seen in decades, and then Chewie make his you know, usual noise, I'm like, okay, here, take my money, you have me again. So, I mean, did you? I have the feeling you and I are sort of the same age, because I call it, since you talk about him all the time, I call it the Christian Slater timeline. I think you and I were there at the beginning, which is why we relate so well to his, you know, career arc. Which is pretty low at this point, but like, what were your feelings on that trailer? I'm assuming you've seen it.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm a big subscriber. I like the website called Trailer Addict. They usually get their stuff up pretty quick there, pretty high quality. Yeah, and I was a huge Star Wars guy. Return of the Jedi is, you know, that was all that full on classic for me. The Ewoks and the whole battle over there, that was a legendary flick for me. And yeah, the second series of films, you know, I kind of like the third one. The first one is worthless to me. The second one I don't even remember at this point. And then the third one was kind of cool.
Where, yeah, to be fair, the third one was cool. I did like that one. The acting was stronger. The plot was tighter. There is none of this. Well, let's do politics between these galaxies that we don't even know about for like 2 hours of the movie. Let's talk more, you know? So.
Yeah, and anything with Darth, with finally get to see some Darth Vader stuff. I mean, that's the kind of stuff I'm kind of into, and then now he's immediately done anyway. So
right, but to be honest, the fight scene at the end, it was great and all, but I still don't understand how he was able to carve Anakin's, like, in one swipe. He like carved Anakin's arm, left leg, the other leg, and then came around and took the hand. Like, I don't understand how he did that in one swipe. It never made sense to me, you know?
It's the high ground is just that real. It's that important, I guess.
Right, the high ground, yeah.
They never made a big point to say how important the high ground, and then all of a sudden it's like, we should know, oh, he has the high ground.
Right, he's like, Anakin, don't do it. I have the high ground. It's like, bro, you're like 3 feet above him on a hill. It doesn't mean that. I mean, maybe if you have an army or something.
And he's Anakin, the greatest freaking Jedi of all time, and just you got the high ground by a couple of feet, and it's just to rap for you. Like, he had no chance. But
I don't think it pertains if you have like a projectile weapon, like if you have a Nerf gun or something. Yeah, you could probably peg him on the high ground pretty good. But I mean, it's just well, you know, that's going back to my problems, but you know that.
the trailer, though, the new trailer, I thought it looks pretty cool. Like, I mean, I get sucked. I'll probably go see any movie that's kind of like this. I mean, I even went and saw that, like, what was it called? Like something John something Mar on Mars or whatever. John.
John Carter.
Yeah. So, and that was even semi entertaining for me, even though it was critically panned and people hated it. But I mean, so stuff like that I'm just into regardless. But this looks pretty cool. The lightsaber with the little three prong thing, that's looking pretty sick. And yeah, it's cool that, you know, when they first said that all the old Star Wars guys are coming back, I'm like, what? Like, what are they going to have? Like a little, you know, I just figured they'd have like a brief kind of, you know, 30-second, like, oh, they're sitting in some, having dinner somewhere, having just a brief thing. Like, I'm like, there's no way Mark Hamill's getting like a movie role here. I'm like, there's no way this guy's getting any kind of play. But it's cool. And Harrison Ford, as you said, he hasn't done anything cool for God knows how long. But
well, so it's just cool. It's like he's so goddamn sleepy. Like when he acts nowadays, like anything he's in, it's like, I don't know if you've seen Expendables 3, but in there it's just like, yeah, you know, I'll take the paycheck. That's cool. And then he just yawns the entire movie.
Yeah, I've seen Expendables 3, all my old heroes from a young age. Yeah, all, it was like my, that was kind of like my dream when I was younger. I'm like, why don't these guys do a fucking, why can't we get Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Van Damme, like all these guys in the same movie? And unfortunately, you know, they did it, and I kind of like, the first one was all right, the second was all right, and then they went like PG-13, and it just kind of became a corny, like, one-liner, like, but not great. I don't know. I don't know.
I'll still watch them, though. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, I'll watch them as many as they put out. I will go see
them. These are like our heroes, but I gotta ask, the beef has to end, man. Where is Steven Seagal? He needs to be in one of these.
Oh, my God. How have they not gotten him in there? I mean, I heard the guy is just a, I heard he is a dick. I actually met his, a woman who used to take, like, be his, like, live-in nanny or whatever. I somehow met her through, so she was someone else's nanny when I met her. She's like, oh, yeah, he used to be, his name was, like, Stevie Seagal or something like that. And he had it changed to Steven Seagal to sound, to, you know, to sound so much cooler. Said he was just a total asshole, blah, blah, blah. Not shocking whatsoever, obviously. But yeah, they still got to get him in there because you got to respect him. And he may be, like, bloated as shit now, but I mean, the guy was one of the best hand-to-hand fighters I've ever seen. I gotta
I mean, he seems like a dipshit, but to be fair, the name change, I think, helped. I mean, it does sound a little bit cooler.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then moving on, of course, the second trailer was not as well received, I think, in some parts. Just, of course, it's just reading the internet. I think everyone trolls on the internet, but it's Batman versus Superman. I personally like the trailer. Ben Affleck looks chiseled as ever. I like the idea of a dark, I mean, it's always going to be dark if it's from, you know, anything that Christopher Nolan touches, in which, you know, he produces this line of DC movies. But I like the idea of Superman being regarded as a god by some and by others. You know, maybe this changes him. It's tough to get a idea of what the trailer is about, but the imagery is very good. It's very vivid. I heard that it's based on Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Rises series, in which, you know, an older Batman goes back into action, and there's ultimately a fight between him and Superman. And of course, people always wonder, like, well, how does Superman not wipe the floor with him? And I think Kryptonite is involved somehow. But, you know, from the trailer, it looks pretty good. I'm kind of excited about it. What did you think?
Can you bleed? Yeah, I'm totally into it. I saw a lot of hate on it, and for me, yeah, it's done by the same guy. I'm blanking on the name, but he did 300, and what's the other one he did? Oh, he did my favorite movie.
Watchmen.
Mm-hmm. One of the most underrated movies of all time. Just like you said, just the vivid picture, like the whole way this guy comes correct every time. I'm not concerned at all. I think it's going to be awesome. Like, you know, people were hating on like Batman's thing with the eyes or whatever. I'm like, but it's just the suit. It's a cool new suit. It's just another, it's just a suit upgrade. I don't know.
Well, be fair, the suit that he's wearing at the end looks different than the actual. It looks like almost he built like a mechanical type of thing to protect him, maybe against Superman. I you know, again, I'm a nerd. Sort of, but I'm not that nerdish. Like, I won't, you know, like, you know, I'm not like, excuse me, sir, could you hand me back my pocket protector? You know, I'm not like one of those. It's just like, yeah, I dig it. You know, I'm cool.
Right, like, I'm feeling it. Like, I'm the same thing. It's always like, well, who can beat, you know, nobody can touch Superman. I never understood, like, in the comics, but, I mean, obviously the Kryptonite, and, but, like, but besides that, how else could you ever hurt the, he's indestructible. So, yeah, that'll be interesting how that all plays out, and I don't know how long it actually lasts where they're actually fighting each other. I'm assuming they kind of unite at some point to take on some new evil, or that's a segue to another film or something of that.
Right. I mean, I think we can take the title, I mean, the name of the movie literally, where it's Dawn of Justice. So I'm assuming that there's a Dawn of Justice, per se. So, and of course, it looks like Wonder Woman's going to be introduced in this movie, which I think is a great thing. I think female superheroes are kind of not really popular right now. And I mean,
than what's her name, Black Widow, and she's not even like really, I mean, she's got like what special skills or like she's,
well, they're called boobs, but yeah, I mean, her special skills are looking pretty. Yeah. I mean, but that's more Scarlett Johansson. She's basically playing herself, but with a gun. I'm
right. So, I mean, yeah, there aren't. Yeah, they, I guess. They, I mean, they tried. What they tried? Catwoman, the disaster Catwoman with Halle Berry back in the day. That was.
Oh yeah, that was a terrible movie.
That's one of the worst movies of all time. Yeah. I can't even say I actually watched it, but
I don't remember it. I'm sure I watched it, but the fact that I have no recall of it.
But I kind of like DC, how they're kind of going, you know, kind of going a little gritty, you know, like some of the Marvel, like I was always a Marvel comic guy, but in their movie, and I, like when I was young, I mean, I'm excited that they started making all these movies because that was kind of my dream back in the day when I was younger. But now that they are there, I see them all. And, you know, at least, especially the first ones, if you go back and watch them, the first couple of X-Men or whatever, I mean, they're kind of corny or, like, I mean, they were cool when they came out, but DC seems like, you know, they're trying to go a little grittier here, and I'm feeling it. I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to, like you said, yeah, Marvel can be kind of goofy, which I think works a lot of times. I mean, right. I thought Guardians of the Galaxy, I enjoyed it, but I thought it was a little overrated, but... Thor, The Dark World. I mean, that movie didn't take itself seriously at all, and it worked. You know, it completely worked. They just didn't care. They're just like, yeah, this thing is going to destroy this thing, but you don't care. Let's just go fight. You know? So, and then, you know, just wrapping up, it just came to my mind, you know, you're a big fan of the, you know, whatever's going on Netflix and HBO and whatnot, but I know one of the things that's upcoming, I just recently saw the trailer to it again, was, and I don't even know if you actually watched the first season, but True Detective is coming back, and I didn't realize that it's sneaking up. You know, it's got Colin Farrell, Vince Vaughn, and it's actually got that guy who was in John Carter that we were talking about.
Yeah, earlier.
That guy's in it, and
the other chick, the Notebook chick.
Yeah, Amy Smart. So I'm assuming with the cast that they have, it's going to be a rom com this year.
some great Vince Vaughn rants coming for sure. That's one of my favorite. I mean, that's. I guess they're going a different. No, but he used to be a serious actor. Did you ever see that movie with him and Travolta or whatever, where he was like the bad husband, like murderer dude? I don't
know. No, I haven't, but I have seen The Cell, where, you know, he played the detective with Jennifer Lopez, and you know, Vincent D'Onofrio was the bad guy. I really enjoyed that. That was before he went. I mean, I guess that was he did a little comedy before that. He did Swingers and stuff before that, obviously. So, but yeah, it'll be nice to see him in a serious role, definitely.
Yeah, that show was great. I really liked it. The first season, I don't know if it's because a lot of times I find myself multitasking, looking at sports scores, doing crap on my computer while I'm watching these shows, when I should probably just, you know, give the shows my full attention. But I watched it, but I didn't quite get hooked into it till like maybe like the third or fourth episode. But then after that, I was fully hooked. And yeah, it was a great show. So I'm looking forward to see what they do here.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, the reason I brought it up is because I enjoyed the first season wholly. I know some people didn't like the ending, but I thought it was great. You know what it was? It was just Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey just sucking up the environment. And I will watch anything, anytime with them too. Separate or together, you know, at all times. But, you know, just wrapping up our show, essentially, we like Superman. We like Game of Thrones. We like all this stuff. Is there anything that you're watching right now or reading that you would like to let our listeners know to kind of check out? Because I usually go by your recommendations as well.
Right. So, I used to kind of dog Netflix all the time because back in the day it used to just show like old movies and like, you know, Christian Slater straight to DVD flicks. And I'd be like, dude, who's paying for this? Right. Like,
and the fifth element would randomly be there at all times.
Right. They would have some Seagal movies, so I could go back and catch those classics. So that was cool, Out for Justice or whatever. But they had a show, Bloodline. It was pretty cool. It was kind of a little slow in the beginning, but I got totally hooked on that one. I've seen some people talking about that. The Daredevil one, speaking of comic book stuff, that show was pretty cool. I burned through that probably like in a week, like the little binge watching. And then books, I get some of my readers, or I don't know if they actually read or if they just go to the comment section, but I have a couple people, one of my three readers, they'd be recommending books to me sometime, and right now I'm reading something called Red Rising.
To be fair, T-Hole, you have four readers, but only because I'm actually paid to go over and read your stuff. So
right, okay.
It's like a double-edged sword.
So four quadra there. So we got Red Rising, the Red Rising trilogy, book one. That's what I'm reading right now. And it's actually pretty cool. It's like a mix of like Hunger Games and like I don't even know what it is. It's kind of epic, and it's not too long. So shout out to him. I forget who it was exactly who recommended it, but I get a lot of good recommendations from the readers on there, fellow semi-nerds like you and myself.
All right.
Full out. But, yeah, we got a lot going on. Other shows, those are the only shows I can fully recommend. That Last Ship show is coming back on TV. I normally don't watch any network shows, but I guess they're not even technically – they're cable. So, but I kind of enjoyed that show, but we'll see. I don't know if I'll even watch them.
All right, and as always, right now you can find T-Hole every day on Wednesday at Razzball Baseball. We're going to have football ramping up in a few months. Thank goodness for that. And if you'd like to reach any of us, my Twitter is at JRong, and T-Hole's Twitter is at, and you're going to have to tell me.
T-Hole, T-E-H-O-L, 143.
Is that it? Okay, I felt like I should know it, but I feel like a good excuse is I want the outro to be more personable, so that's why I'm having you say it. We'll just say that.
It's gotcha. Not
that I don't know. All right. Well, thanks for joining us this podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, any questions, just hit us up in our posts or on Razzball at Twitter. And thank you for joining us, T-Hole. It was a great time, and we'll be sure to hit you guys up soon with another podcast.
All right.